This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
That looks nice. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to Sheikh Abdurrahim Green's new YouTube channel. In fact, it's not new. It's just been very inactive.
Yes.
But we've been trying to, you know, boost it this week. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. How are you doing?
I'm good. Alhamdulillah. Jazakallah khair. Alhamdulillah. Ala kulli hal.
You look like you just came out of the snow and
I just came from outside sledging with the kids in the snowstorm. It was great fun up here in the Shropshire Hills.
Brilliant. So what we're doing today is we're going to be speaking about dopamine slavery. Now, just before that, just, you know, trying to get the crowd a little bit warmed up. Before we speak about this topic, a few years ago, you had this willpower course.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm guessing it's just something which you still want to develop and still want to work with, inshallah. And so we're going to be speaking a little bit about dopamine slavery and then the willpower course. And also, additionally, what is the plan for this channel? So what is your vision? YouTube, as we know, is a great live streaming platform. And in fact, according to some stats, is going to be surpassing the likes of Twitch and other sort of platforms. Mm. So it's definitely something worth investing in. So before we get more people joining us, I want everybody right now to just make sure that if you haven't subscribed already, that you subscribe to Sheikh Abdurrahim Green's channel. Inshallah, we're going to be trying to do live streams pretty much at least once a week, inshallah, Sheikh. Right?
Sounds good.
Alongside your very busy schedule, we'll try and fit this in. Now, when it comes to the topic of dopamine slavery, before we get into the slavery aspect and why this is an important topic, could you just explain to us, Sheikh, what is dopamine and why is it important when it comes to the study of willpower, addiction, and these related topics?
Right. Okay. I've been thinking about a simple, I mean, look, on a very basic level, from a scientific point of view, dopamine is a neurotransmitter. It is a chemical that transmits signals in your brain, and it is responsible for making you feel certain things. It does depend on what part of the brain the dopamine is present. And you have various other neurotransmitters, like oxytocin, for example. Anyway, there's lots of other, so many, serotonin, you know, adrenaline is not really a neurotransmitter, but it does affect your brain as well. So you have different, so these different chemicals in your brain affect your mood, they affect how your brain functions, and it depends where they are in your brain, right? So that's basically dopamine. It's one of those chemicals. But the main task of dopamine, the main thing that dopamine does, if I first start by explaining it in simple Islamic terms, dopamine is almost, I couldn't say definitively as a fact. Yeah, I'm not saying this, but dopamine is basically your nafs. That's basically what dopamine is, almost the same. If you look at what dopamine does and you look at what the description of the nafs are, you know, from the Islamic terminology, then dopamine is almost one and the same thing, right? So from an evolutionary perspective, right? So if we take it from, you know, how the scientists describe it, and obviously they generally believe in evolution and that all of these things have a place in our development, right? Dopamine basically is what drives us. It drives us towards rewards. Anything that we feel gives us a reward, dopamine drives us towards it. Now, you will find many people on YouTube, right? They'll talk about dopamine and they say, oh, it's the pleasure chemical. It is not the pleasure chemical. Dopamine is not a pleasure chemical. Dopamine does not make you feel happy. It doesn't. In fact, it doesn't make you happy at all. In fact, dopamine makes you feel agitated. It doesn't make you feel happy. but it drives you towards what you think is going to make you happy. And it is essential. And by the way, this is so important. Dopamine is not necessarily your enemy. Don't think of dopamine as your enemy. There can be this very wrong way of thinking about, you know, things like dopamine or even our nafs, right? And yes, I suppose in a sense it is an enemy in the sense that it can distract you from the goals that you want to achieve. And very often dopamine gets in the way of our long-term goals. Willpower is defined in psychological terms as your ability to delay gratification in order to achieve a long-term goal or objective. Put very simply, I want something now, but I realize that if I have that thing now, I'm not going to have something more desirable in the future. Yeah. From our dini perspective, from the Islamic perspective, if you want to get to paradise, you can't do all those haram things that you feel tempted by, right? And you also have to put effort into doing things that are actually quite hard and quite difficult and quite stressful and quite trying, because that's the only way you're going to get to paradise. You need willpower to get to paradise, basically. That's what it is, right? And you need to resist the urges, many of the urges of dopamine. However, just to point out that dopamine is essential. If you want to see what happens when you have a lack of dopamine, then look at someone with Alzheimer's. One of the markers of Alzheimer's, right, is that people, they have very low dopamine levels. Their dopamine is not functioning properly anymore. And because of that, they're not driven. Dopamine drives you, right? Actually, if you really master yourself and you understand dopamine and you achieve real mastery, right, then you can use dopamine to your advantage. But most people, like you said, you gave that nice title, dopamine slavery. Most people, unfortunately, are slaves to dopamine. They are slaves to it because when it kicks in, it can feel like you are possessed, right? In fact, there's three different things we could put, you know, if you put together three different aspects of the human psyche, our minds, right, our heart, we could call it the qalb as well, to be honest, from the Islamic perspective. This is all more, we talk about it more in the point of view of the qalb or even the aql, the intellect, and all of these things come together, right? I think the Islamic terminology is slightly different, but a lot of it boils down to the same, describing the same things, but in a slightly different framework, right? But it's all fine because a lot of it is just, you know, it's literally amazing. It's the same stuff, right? A lot of the stuff that you find, you know, the spiritual masters of the past in Islam were talking about, you find that modern psychologists are talking about as well, right? Okay, so what was I saying? Dopamine slavery, right?
So just before we get into it, the way I wanted to structure it is to first go with the problem and then the reaction and the solution. So, firstly, let's see with the audience. I mean, mashallah, a lot of people are commenting. Some are saying, you know, you can get dopamine from Salah. Some speaking about dopamine in video games. And obviously, social media is coming up a lot. Yep. So let's first do this sort of survey, I guess, with the audience, because live streams are obviously about engagement. So guys, everyone's saying I'm addicted and, you know, these types of things, or they're alluding to that. But let's first get down to this level. What is, do you think, in your life, the number one thing which on a regular basis you feel you're a slave to, and you think dopamine is, causing you to be a slave to that? But like the Sheikh said, it's not a pleasure thing. It can be a good
thing. It drives you towards pleasure, right?
Yeah.
Dopamine itself is not the feeling of pleasure. It's the drive. It's that, you know, it's that itch that you get that I can't relax until I've had that chocolate bar, right?
Yeah.
I need to eat that chocolate. Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to look at that, you know, haram, whatever it is, pornographic thing. Like, you know, I need to open that little red button that they have, you know, that little red thing they have on your social media that shows you how many messages you've got. I have to click on it. That feeling, I've got to do it, I've got to do it. That is dopamine, right? Mm. That's making you feel that.
So the answers we're getting, Sheikh, are social media, music, my phone, computer. Someone says weed. You're not supposed to be that.
Well, okay, he's hidden behind a username that you don't know.
So internet, social media is coming up again and again. Someone wrote actually my own garden. So maybe someone's really addicted to gardening. That could be something. So, it's interesting you say that it's basically something which makes you, dopamine's making you think this thing's going to give you pleasure, but it can actually, I think you're opening up the possibility, can just lead you to misery, even though.
Yeah, because the thing is the thing that dopamine doesn't care, right? It's just a neurotransmitter, right?
Yeah.
And you have to think, you have to think of human beings, how we lived, not even 1,000 years ago, right? How did human beings live 200-300 years ago, as recently as that? But until today, the vast majority of human beings, right? Not the vast majority, but a very good portion of human beings just still live on the breadline, right?
Yeah.
So this, the drive to reproduce, to basically, to have sex, right? To eat, to drink, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, it's also not just to eat and drink, but to eat, to go for high calorie, sweet things that, provide a lot of nutrition in a very small package, right? That there's obviously very good reasons throughout human history, where most of history we've been starving, right? Where this is actually really good. This is what helps you to survive. So you have to understand dopamine is not your enemy necessarily, but it can become your enemy, because we believe we get pleasure from so many things that are actually potentially really damaging for us. This is the problem, right? It's the same thing with another issue that we have psychologically, and that is a whole other thing called the fight or flight response, right? So that's the things that we get afraid of. So there's things that we seek pleasure in. On the flip side, there's things that we are afraid of, right? Again, fight or flight is such an important thing that we have as human beings, because it's what saves us from being eaten by lions and saber-toothed tigers and you being attacked, hijacked by our enemies and so on and so forth, right? It helps, it saves us, right? But today, this kicks in all sorts of extraordinary ways, right? When we feel our ego is being battered, when we feel someone is belittling us, when we feel someone is putting us down, when we're not feeling appreciated, we act as if even mundane things in life, like being, maybe being late for work or having too many projects, like someone I know who's got piles and piles of projects that he can't deal with, right? So this actually can trigger the fight or flight or freeze. It actually should be called fight, flight, or freeze, because one of the things, you just want to run. You want to run from it. You want to run from that responsibility. You want to run as fast as you can, because you feel it like this is threatening my life, right? You do.
Yep.
Okay. Or sometimes you just freeze. You can freeze, like you just can't do anything. You literally become like a zombie. You can't do anything. So we're dealing with this, and like all sorts of weird things in the modern world trigger this fight or flight response, right? Mm-hmm. And similarly with dopamine, it gets triggered by, our phones are literally designed, and there's quite a few YouTube channels, YouTube videos now, of these guys who work for Google, work for Instagram, work for Facebook, coming on and saying, look, we did this stuff. We didn't really realize what we're doing. We thought it would be a great way to develop our product. Even some of them really had good intentions, but we knew we were turning these things into dopamine devices, right? Yeah. Those little things were designed to make you, the iPhone is designed so you can't put it down. Like it, the whole way, particularly the iPhone, by the way, is extraordinary, right? It says that people with their iPhones have the same psychological brainwave state as they do when they are having religious experiences.
Wow.
Right? And I mean, as Muslims, this is scary, because we understand as Muslims that the most important experiences are our religious experiences. We would argue that. So anything that threatens the right direction of that is very serious. So basically, you know, you can have this perfect storm of your brain being hijacked. When I say your brain, right? In the front of your brain, right, is what is called the prefrontal cortex, right? The prefrontal cortex is where the thinking, pausing, and planning part takes. This is where you think about your future. You think about the consequences, right? You plan. It's in a sense that logic center where you think, you plan, you ponder, you weigh. Is this going to help me? Is this not going to help me? Right? So generally, most of the time, this is the part of the brain we want to engage. This is the thing that we want to be using. We want to be using our akal most of the time, not all the time, right? Like, you know, when it comes to you being attacked by your enemies, you need to switch off your akal and just begin to react instinctively, right? Because the akal is not going to help you that much. You got to work on instinct sometimes. But most of the time, especially in modern life, we need to use that prefrontal cortex. But here's the crazy thing, right? Dopamine, when you get a dopamine surge, it shuts off your access to your prefrontal cortex, right? That's one of the things that dopamine does. The neurotransmitter actually makes it very hard for you to think. It makes you hard for you to pause and plan. That's why you can fall into dopamine slavery. It can literally seem like you are possessed. A person, you know, they can get hijacked by dopamine and literally, Sabor, it's like, what was I doing? Like, literally, you can't understand, how could I do that, right?
It kind of reminds me of when Allah says in the Quran about the people of Lut alayhi salam, that they were in this blind
intoxication. Absolutely. Because if they had stopped, really, just exactly, what a perfect description, bro, right? Because they'd literally surrendered to it. They were not using their aql, and this is why, right? When the angels say to the people, right, who are being dragged into the hellfire, didn't someone come and didn't someone warn you of this? And the people will say, if only we had used our aql, right? In Surah Al-Mulk, it mentions this. If only we had used our aql, we would not now be in the fire. If only we had paused and thought deeply about the consequences of everything, right? That's it. The people of Lut, they couldn't. They were so wrapped up in their addiction, their slavery to what gave them pleasure, right?
Yeah.
They don't even think, really, because a lot of these things don't really give you pleasure, right? Yeah. And even if they do give you pleasure, Sabur, it is very short-lived. The pleasure is very short-lived. How long is the pleasure of sex, right? The activity, the climax, what is it, right? For most people, on average, 15 minutes, right? The actual climax is, what, seconds, right? I mean, that's it. And then afterwards, how do you feel, really? Especially if it's something that is haram. Do you feel good about it within yourself, really, once that pleasure has subsided? I mean, that's a whole other thing. That's a whole other topic, right? The point is, and dopamine doesn't care whether you actually feel happy at the end, right? That's the thing. Dopamine doesn't care about that. Dopamine is just driving you towards what you think is going to make you happy. Right? Or what you think is going to give you some sort of pleasure.
That's a really beautiful point. And I want to highlight the thing that you said about the prefrontal cortex, that before, I mean, yes, we use it for planning and thinking, but the interesting thing is that human beings, previously we believed that it didn't fully develop till you were 25, the prefrontal cortex.
Right, okay.
But recent studies are actually showing that it's until you're in your 40s.
Very interesting. You don't become an adult, a real man, until you're 40. Yeah. And this is why children, like in Islam, they're not, you know, they, you know, often, you know, my wife, you know, you hear her saying, maybe when are you going to get some aql? She says to the kids, right? Because kids, they don't have it, right? They don't, you know, it's not strong. They're very much driven by their, you know, impulses and their desires, right? But it takes training, right? You have to train it. This is what a lot of human, this is what, in reality, this is what human civilization is. Human civilization is really the training of the prefrontal cortex.
Yeah.
It's the training of willpower. Literally, that is what civilization is, right? Because if you just left yourself, right, to your instincts, right, anyone who has a different shade from you, you'd have a flipping name for them. Anyone who has a different accent from you, you'd have some other ready, you'd be ready to combat them. I mean, basically, look, human beings, we're basically used to living in small little tribal units of 30, 20 yeah. people. Even then, within that tribal unit, we probably have arguments in there, let alone someone from another tribe, right? Who we are basically yeah. mostly programmed to go to war with them and fight to the death, right? Yeah. Civilization is all about it's all about training from a very young age, restraint,
yeah,
to restrain your impulses, right? That's why we have laws against hate speech, for example, right? But it's not just enough having laws, right? You have to have a whole system. And this is the problem, by the way. This is a whole different, you know, sending me down a rabbit hole now. It's very interesting that this guy, actually, I wish I'd bought the book with me. I didn't think I was going to use it. But as a quick side point, you know, on that topic, is someone did a research, he wrote a massive book on this. And the big quick conclusion of this is basically once any civilization starts to practice premarital sex, right? Mm-hmm. Or out, you know, sex outside of marriage, right? Any civilization, once it becomes common, the civilization is destroyed in two generations.
Wow.
Right? Why? Because one of the most important systems of control for your impulses is abstaining from sex outside of marriage. Any society that abandons that will destroy itself within yeah. two generations, right? And this has been shown again and again and again, evidenced in history, right? So probably we got one generation left in the West, unless it reforms itself, but which the West has constantly able to reinvent itself and reform itself. Right?
It's very interesting what you're saying, because yeah. if we look at the Victorians, they were a lot more conservative than their previous generation. So you yeah. have this natural, you know, people, and even the 60s, I mean, the 60s people are going wild, you know, yeah. even evolutionary psychologists, they talk about this idea that, you know, we thought sexual jealousy would disappear and 60s, everyone was doing it with each other. But then they realized actually, no, and society became more conservative in the yeah. 80s and 90s than it was in the 60s. Yeah.
Well, I mean, thank God, it's part of what's keeping us together from the point of view of society, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I did some research into this quite a while ago. And I think it was off the back of this whole willpower thing. I mean, you know what it is when you start studying something, you go down yeah. this branch and you go down that branch, you're like, you start looking into a whole lot of things. So one of the things when I started studying about willpower is one of the branches I went down is I was thinking about, I wonder what is the theory of sex, right? I mean, the theory of sex from the point of view of evolutionary, like why is sex enjoyable? Why is it so fun, right? Why is it so amazing, right? What is the evolutionary, because Allah knows best, but as far as I know, for a lot of animals, it's not necessarily fun. For some animals, they die, right? Like sex is the last act that they do, right? For some animals, for some creatures, not animals, but for some insects, right? And it's not necessarily enjoyable, right?
Yeah.
Why? Why is it enjoyable? Why is it incredibly enjoyable for human beings, yeah, many primates as well, right? So I was looking, I was saying, well, I wonder what the various theories are on this. Now, obviously, there's about four theories, I can't remember. The only one that seemed to make sense to me, and it's probably biased because it's what I was looking for and it matched my own ideas, right? Is that sex is a bonding mechanism, right?
Pair bonding, yeah.
sex is a bonding mechanism, right? It is one of the things that helps you bond very, very strongly with your partner. And that is needed because you are going to do something that is really tough. And that is, you're going to raise a bunch of little kids. These kids are going to, they're going to take what, 10 years before they can really even defend themselves in any meaningful way? More, right? More than that. 14 years, let's say, right? They're still going to need your help for 13, 14 years, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to need mum and they're going to need dad, right? Sex is, you know, the enjoyment of sex, right, is one of the things that really helps keep that bond strong. Now, here's the problem. If you allow in society sex to be practiced recreationally, as a recreation, let's have a bit of fun. Let's just have some sex just for fun, right? It's just enjoyment. You're having recreational sex. The thing, the problem here is, if it's true as a theory, which I believe it is, because I'm sure if they study it, they'll find I'm 99% sure, right? That if it's true, then here's the crazy thing is that all of this, you know, having these one night stands, what is that doing to a person? Like, if you are programmed for this act, right, to form very deep, profound connection with another human being, right, and then within one night you break it and you don't even talk to that person again, what does that do to you? What does that do to your ability to form those profound connections? What does that do to your ability to maintain those relationships in a husband and wife situation that is needed in order to raise a family? It destroys it, right? That's why, one of the other reasons why, right? You can see why one of the, you know, benchmarks of the destruction of a society is when sex outside of marriage becomes practiced widely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that's just a side. It's interesting because it's a side point off the whole discussion on willpower. But the point goes back to this abstinence, right, is part of training. One of the ways that you train your willpower, one of the ways that you train your prefrontal cortex, is by resisting temptation, right? So how do you learn to be patient? Because it's basically sabr, yeah? How do you learn to be sabr? By practicing sabr. That's how you learn it, right? Yeah.
What's interesting about what you were, the way you're summarizing it, is that civilization is essentially judged by, or success could be gauged by, its restraining mechanisms and how it can actually enforce those. And that's really quite interesting when you think about it, because even when it comes to the ancients, who we think of them as being a bit backwards in terms of, but they actually had really powerful mechanisms to actually restrain these types of actions. Because in a way, right now we're in a sort of evolutionary free fall. It's like a Royal Rumble. I mean, what's to stop somebody technically spending most of their time eating junk food and then waiting outside a sperm donation bank? From a Darwinian point of view, it's perfectly fine to do something like that. But going back to your point about restraint, as Muslims, we obviously have the higher goal to get to Jannah. And I've seen in the willpower course that you begin off the course with a particular narration of Jibreel alayhi salam and the conversation with Allah. So would you like to just explain that again? Because I think for the viewers, that's a very powerful narration.
Well, I tell you what, bro, you mentioned that hadith because I need to go and get a charger for my because I'm gonna popped up that I've got a low battery, right?
Right, that's fine.
I can tell one of my kids to go and get it, right? But I just need to... Yeah, so basically the hadith is, you know, that Allah tells Jibreel, go and I've created hellfire. Go and look at it. Tell me what you think. Jibreel goes to hellfire, comes back to Allah. He said, anyone who hears about this place, they will never go to it. You know, meaning like just hearing about it, that's it. They're going to do whatever it takes not to get there.
Yep.
Then Allah surrounds hellfire with temptations, right? And then he says to Jibreel, okay, go and look at hellfire. He doesn't say okay, but he says, go and look at hellfire. Tell me what you think. Jibreel comes back. He says, Allah, I'm afraid nobody will escape it because these temptations are so great, right? And the same with paradise. Allah creates paradise. He says, tell me what you think. Jibril comes back. He says, anyone who hears about this place, they're going to go there, right? Then Allah surrounds it with difficulties, with hardships, with trials, with tests. And then he says to Jibril, tell me what you think. And he says, I'm afraid nobody will enter it. Yeah. So, I mean, that really summarizes, that's really, that literally is, like, literally, life is a willpower test.
Yeah.
It is literally, if you take the classic psychological definition of willpower, it is literally your ability in order to delay gratification, right? Yeah. In order to achieve a long-term objective. And it could be, you know, willpower is two things. I will do and I won't do, right? I will do are the things that you have to do. Like you have to pray five times a day. Like you have to fast Ramadan. By the way, all of these things are incredible at building your willpower, by the way, right? They're amazing at building your willpower. Taqwa is similar type of thing, right? You have to make hajj. You have to give some of your money to the poor and the needy, right? So these are the things you have to do. You have to enjoy what is right and forbid what is wrong. Stand up for truth and justice. Speak the truth even against yourself. And then there's the things you have to keep away from. You mustn't do. You mustn't lie. You mustn't cheat. You mustn't steal. You mustn't make. I should have started with shirk and kufr, right? You mustn't kill. You mustn't drink alcohol. You must not fornicate. So those are, all of this is willpower. Whether it's using, you know, something you have to do and something you have to achieve, or maybe a more mundane level. I have these projects I have to do, this work I have to do, this deadline I've got to meet, right? Or there's things you mustn't do. Often, by the way, in order to achieve those things that you need to do, you have to stop doing some other things. Right? Mm-hmm. Like it's so ironic, this willpower course. I've done all this research on willpower, and mostly I had really applied it around diet, right? Although I found it was helping me in so many things in my life, even my relationship with my wife and my family, it was like helping me in so many things, right? It was amazing, right? But I just couldn't get this course done. And I realized basically I sat and thought about it as what you have to do, right? And I realized it was basically the flipping phone. It was because I would sit down and I would literally spend 3, 4, 5 hours reading this, reading that article, looking at this, answering that, checking this WhatsApp message, this and that. Before I know it, the whole day had gone and I had done nothing. I had all the notes. I had literally everything, right? Mm-hmm. Everything ready. But I just, and I said, you know what I need to do is I need to apply the principles of the willpower course in order to do the willpower course. That willpower course itself was a massive implementation of the very strategies that I teach in it, which is like, you know, it's a bit ironic, but at the same time, it's, you know, mashallah, it's fantastic, you know. It really was just like you just had, and really what willpower is actually interesting. It's like a lot of people imagine they have a wrong idea about willpower. They think it's some like Jedi mind trick. They think it's like you can, you know, you with the force of your mind, you could move an object. Yeah. You know, like Yoda moving whatever, Luke Skywalker getting his ship out of the swamp. Right. They think this is willpower. Right. No. That's just ridiculous. Right. Yeah. Okay. The only one who has willpower like that is Allah. He just says kun fayakun. He just says be and it is. That's it, right? Right? We don't have willpower like that, right? What we have is a series of strategies. And it is a little bit like war. In fact, the book that I really based most of my course on, right? And if anyone's a reader, you can read it. I mean, the book wouldn't have all the Islamic stuff that I've put in, but it's a really good book. It's called The Willpower Instinct, right, by Kelly McGonigal. And that was the most useful book, a really, really brilliant book. And I just took some, and from other books and other stuff as well, but it wasn't the only book I used, yeah. But I forgot my point. I was getting lost there. What was I saying?
Well, you were speaking about how you had to apply the willpower course to yourself to actually get it done. And this reminded me of another.
In that book, bro. Sorry. She says that you're literally, you know what she says? You're at war with yourself.
Wow.
Yeah. Literally, I thought, subhanAllah, jihad bil nafs. She uses that. She says you have to treat yourself like you're at war with it. You have to use deception. You have to use strategies. You have to trick it. It's like literally, that's what she's describing it. It's like a battle. You have to learn to trick yourself. That's what willpower is. A lot of willpower is actually just strategies you use. And the other book that I found really, which I actually want to do a whole, I would love to do a whole nother course, like much more connected to this book, is called the Chimp Paradox. Yeah, I found it's one of the most helpful books, right? Really, really helpful, The Chimp Paradox. Again, normally, by the way, guys, I'll be honest, I don't recommend books to people. People ask me, oh, recommend a book, and I've given it, and then people start giving me a hard time. Oh, Abdurrahim, this is full of kufr and shirk, and this guy's an atheist. You know, whatever, I get these type of things. I shouldn't really mention these books because none of these guys are Muslims, right? The Willpower Instinct, they're scientists. They come from an evolutionary perspective. They don't believe in God, right? So you could get confused, right? So I don't really, you know, unless you have a really good foundation and, you know, in your Aqidah is strong and your Islam is strong, unfortunately, reading these books might make you more confused, right?
Mm.
So, you know, best thing to do is go to someone who can, you know, filter this stuff for you, inshallah. With this, that's what I've done in my course, bro. That's what I've done. As you've done it, so you know, I've really filtered the stuff, taken it out, given it, you know, referred it back to the Quran and Sunnah, yeah, given it sort of Islamic framework. Yeah. Alhamdulillah. It's yeah, you know,
is this still live?
The course is really good, but I don't know.
Is the course still live for people to register?
Yeah, you can go to Get I Will Power. I think it's Get I Will Power or Get I Will Power for You. com. I have to check it up. Maybe you can quickly do a quick search for me.
While the Sheikh is looking it up, and you can just WhatsApp me, Sheikh, and I'll put it up. I did this course, and in fact, when I first signed on to it, then I didn't do it. And Sheikh Abdurrahim,
you need willpower to do the
willpower. He WhatsApped me and he said, have you done it? And I said, no. And then he sent me a message when he looked quite angry and he was driving. And that was sufficient reason to actually start doing it. However, when I did it, I actually started to think to myself, oh my God, this is why Shaitan doesn't want me to do this. Like this.
I'm telling you, man, he does not want you to do it.
He's sitting there just britting it. I hope you don't do this course. I'm going to be able to.
I sent it to you. It's Get I Will Power. That's what it is. GetIWillPower.com. Yeah, you can find that. I said, his little pop up comes, this is for heroes, not for sheep. Yeah, if you're a sheep, this is not for you. And it really isn't, right? It really isn't. Because it's interesting, because this is a whole other subject. I get lost on this one, right? But it's so interesting that, you know, throughout history, human history, we have heroes. Every culture, however primitive, seemingly primitive, has heroes. And the interesting thing is the story, the pattern of the journey of the hero in every society is almost identical, right? Almost identical. And it's so amazing that if you look at the life of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, it's almost as if his life has been scripted according to this journey of the hero. It's incredible.
Yeah.
But basically, it's all about the journey of the self. It's all about learning to master yourself. That's ultimately what it comes down to. Like the thing, what makes a hero is that they haven't just surrendered to their nafs. They're not just sheep. They've done something that has taken willpower. That's really what it comes down to, right? They've mastered themselves in some way, shape or form. Right. And that's true until today. I mean, a lot of heroes are sporting heroes or business heroes, but all of these people, the one thing they have in common really is a degree of self-mastery. They have delayed gratification in order to achieve some incredible objective. And they've had to give up a lot of stuff that most people are happy to just graze the grass like sheep. Bah, you know, munch the grass, you know, and wait for the, you know, slaughter to come along. Right.
So, I mean,
well, I better get the charger, bro.
Yeah, you get the charger. So in terms of this particular course, I did it many years ago and it was phenomenal. It was amazing. It was something which really made me aware of just how easily the human mind can be tricked. So especially when it comes to, say, something we indulge in pretty much three times a day, which we don't need at all, probably even once a day, which is food. So, you know, you're on your phone and, you know, Uber Eats or whatever it is, or you just open the fridge and, you know, you get this type of, okay, like this dopamine trigger, and makes you think, okay, it's just one milkshake, or it's this or it's that. When actually the simple tricks that inshallah Sheikh Abdulrahim Green is going to be sharing with you guys, and you're going to see through that you can actually fight off the dopamine. So one of the things you can actually do is you can wait 10 minutes. So you see a cheeseburger, you see a milkshake or whatever your favorite thing is, you wait 10 minutes and, you know, the dopamine is no longer pushing you. It's maybe pushing you 5% that it was before. Likewise, you know, the other thing which the course teaches is about, you have to treat these types of triggers like they are, like they're an ambush, and that you have to have this type of reflex, and you have to understand what's happening in your body. Now, I was so...
Counter-ambush training.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I was so
happy. It's my little system that I developed. Yeah. Because it's like, I guess it's like anything else. It's like, if like anyone who studied martial arts, if you haven't, everyone probably should. I don't know why people, like, you know, you're a Muslim, you should know martial arts, right? But, you know, in order, like, anyone can go there and you can, you know, study all you like and do all these patterns and whatever. But unless you actually have real reflex training, yeah, unless you actually go and actually practice being hit and hitting someone, right? You've got to train that reflex action, right? You've got to train it. Just watching movies or watching is not going to do it, right? And it's the same with training your response to dopamine, right? So when you get hijacked by dopamine, when that dopamine makes you his slave, right? You've got to train yourself not to give in, right? So it's not like you can't just read it. You have to practice it, right? And, you know, the three component, you know, so the first thing you develop, right, this is my course, right? This is the summary of my course, right? The first thing you develop is awareness, right? Most of us have triggers. We have things that trigger us. Now, everyone is different. What triggers you, Sabor, is going to be different from what triggers me, right? There may be things that just don't interest me at all, but they interest you, right? So you have to, so I guess one of the most important things, and it's interesting that Kelly McGonigal in her book, The Willpower Instinct, literally her summary of her whole book is you need to practice mindfulness, right?
Taqwa.
It's this state of being constantly mindful. And when we say mindful, prefrontal cortexfulness, right? It's thinking about everything you do, not thinking about it necessarily, but being present, right? But I think for Muslim, I've said that you can't be truly mindful unless you believe in Allah, right? Because if you don't believe in God, right, then you're excluding one of the most important dimensions of every single thing that happens in your life, is the fact that it's been created by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that he has provided you with everything that you have. And if you fail to be mindful of that, you are not really being mindful at all, right? I mean, you might be, you know, you might be being mindful compared to a glutton who just doesn't think about what they stuff in their face, or a nymphomaniac who doesn't care what who she or he, you know, whatever does, right? Okay. But you're not truly mindful if you're not thinking about Allah. And if you think about it as a Muslim, shouldn't we be like that? Shouldn't we be sitting down every time we have a cup of tea, every time we eat some food? Shouldn't we be thinking about how Allah brought this to us, right? Whatever it is, our eyes, what are we using our eyes for? Our ears, what are we? So this state of being mindful, right, is really the biggest and most important thing. So part of that mindfulness is just being aware of when dopamine hijacks you. Yeah. So just like when I was doing my course, when I sat down and thought about it, I realized, okay, what's going on? I know what's going on, right? I realized that I sit there in my computer in the morning. I've got all the intentions, right? I've got every intention of doing the work and writing the script. Yeah. But 3 hours later, nothing's happened because I'm just on my phone, right? Okay. Right. What triggers me? What makes me? So then I realized, okay, I just made a bargain with myself. So that's anyway, the first thing is awareness. You've got to be awareness, whatever it is that you want to deal with. You've got to be aware. What triggers my dopamine? Right. Maybe, I don't know. Let's just take an example. You know, like whoever that guy is, whoever said I smoke weed. Right. Well, hopefully you don't smoke it nonstop all the time. But, you know, like maybe you may have given it up for a week or 2 weeks or a few days. Right. But then what triggers you? Oh, you know, when you're feeling, I don't know, whatever it is, stressed out. I'm just giving some examples. Right. You know, you're stressed out. You had enough. There's a big argument in the house. Right. You just can't take it anymore. And there's a certain part of town, you know, that if you go there, someone's going to offer you some weed, right? And you find yourself going down there. So like, these are all your triggers, you know, okay, these are the things that trigger me, right? Boom, boom, one, two, three, right? You have to study yourself, what's happening, because you want to break that pattern. You want to break those habits, right? How do you do that, right? So you've got the awareness is the first thing, right? Right. The second thing is when you get that urge, right? So that's A is awareness. B is breathe. When the urge comes, when that dopamine urge comes, you have, and brothers and sisters, most of us don't know how to breathe. I know it sounds like some yogi stuff, but it's really true. Honestly, I before I was Muslim, I practiced Buddhism for 3 years. And this is the first thing that, like, it wasn't even Buddhism. It was just like some, you know, but it was so true. Most people don't know how to breathe, right? I really recommend you learn the Wim Hof method, by the way. He'll teach you how to breathe and building willpower by having cold showers. Brilliant, right? Okay, so learn how to breathe. Basically, you breathe deeply right into your abdomen, right? It's not a chest like that. It's right deep down into your abdomen, and then you fill up your chest, and then you do that to the count of seven. One, breathe in, one, two, and then out, one, two, three, four, five. And you, as you're breathing out, you're already feeling you're beginning to relax. You do that three times, and by the way, what does that do? That slows down your heart rate and allows you to re-engage your prefrontal cortex. It allows that dopamine surge to dissipate. The next thing is D, right? A, so sorry, B is breathe, right? A, B, C, right? Breathe, A, breathe, yeah. C is change. Change what? Change your state, right? Because now, why did you get that dopamine surge? You got that dopamine surge because you were in the house, the argument started, you got that, I need to smoke some weed, I got to have that high, I got to get out of this. That's it. You know it's happening. So what? Yeah, you do need to get out, but not in that wrong place that you want to do, but you need to change your state, right? Yeah. The best thing to do is go and pray 2 rakat, honestly, right? I would say if you can do that, go and pray 2 rakat. This changing your state is what the Prophet taught us. When you get angry, what do? You change your state. You change your state by doing. If you're standing up, you sit down. If you're sitting down and you're angry, you lie down. If you make wudu, it's a state change.
Yeah.
The purpose of that is to put a distance between you and that thing that is presenting temptation. Yeah. Right. And then D, right? A, B, C, D is delay. That's the 10 minutes that Sabor was talking about. Give yourself 10 minutes. Give yourself 10 minutes, right? Say to your brain, say to yourself, you know what? If you really, really want to do this after 10 minutes, really, you can do it. But in that 10 minutes, you've got to think deeply about what are your goals? What are your objectives? And that's why, by the way, in the course I do teach you, it's very important to actually write that down. Think about your goals, right? Because you've got to have a plan, right? So, you know, hopefully now the crazy, you know, this may be controversial, very controversial, but, you know, the final thing is if after 10 minutes, you know, with this 10 minutes you give yourself, if you really feel like doing it after 10 minutes and you've thought about it and you calm down, you can give yourself permission, right? Now, obviously I'm not saying you're giving yourself permission to do haram, right? But the thing here is, this is a whole nother thing in psychology, right? The more you make yourself try to stop thinking about something, guess what happens? The more you think about it, right? Try not to think about a pink elephant, you know? Pink elephant, don't think about pink elephant, right? And, you know, 1 minute from now, try not to think about a pink elephant. Like most of us, that's all we can think of. You know, it's actually like, well known, it's called in psychology, the white bear, not the pink elephant, right? Okay, so, yeah, one of the things is just, you know, what I call my favorite thing in my whole course is what I call surfing the urge, right? And this is one of the most useful things. And like, for me, that's useful, surfing the urge. I literally feel the urge. You see, because you have to understand, brothers and sisters, these urges, some of them are natural, right? It's just part of you. You don't want to push it away and try not to think about it. You want to say, yeah, it's like you say, I can see you. I know you're there. I know your needs are real. I know you think they're real, right? I can understand that, right? I recognize it. But, you know, we're not going to give into it. We're going to surf it, right? So you like, it's like you just let it, you know, it could be like clouds, you let it dissipate. Or another technique is you're imagining you're in a bus, because sometimes all these things, these noises, you imagine you're sitting in a bus. And, you know, you just let the passengers get off one by one. Yeah, just get off, right? Sit there. Or you surf. For me, I feel like it's a big wave. It hits me like a wave. And I literally imagine myself surfing this wave, right? And just let it go, right? So that's important from a psychological perspective, because the more you try to dismiss the thought and say, no, 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 the more it will stick with you, right? So that sort of acknowledgement that, yeah, you're there, it's genuine, right? But you got to surf it. And there's so many other things, like there's so many other things I bring in the course, the helicopter ride, right? Thinking about yourself in, you know, in the future. Most of us treat our future selves like, you know, like if you're 20, think about yourself when you're my age, right? When you're 56, whatever I am, right? Yeah. You don't. You will think about, it's you. It's the same you, brothers and sisters, right? That's you, the same you. But you don't. You think of that person as a complete stranger. He might as well be from Timbuktu, unless you're from Timbuktu, obviously, brothers and sisters. But, you know, he might as well be. That's you in the future, but you don't think of yourself as actually a real person. You don't think about what you do now, how that's going to affect you in the future, all right? So there's a whole bunch of other stuff, but that's it. That's some of the things, bro.
Yeah, and what's beautiful about the ABCD thing is from each one of those stages, we can see a clear Islamic dimension. We can see a clear Islamic link. So with the C, the change part, it's not only about a physical change, and we can think of how the Prophet spoke about the man who committed 99 murders. So there's that. The state change in terms of thinking about death, because Prophet said that, you know, he was asked about who is the wisest, and he said the wisest is, you know, paraphrasing here, but the one who remembers death and prepares for it. And these things are extremely important, because I think, like you said, one of the things which we do is we make these projections in the future. Oh, in the future, I'll be a saint. You know, I'll be a great guy. But actually, what's really sad is, people get caught, having affairs in their 70s, in their 60s. You know, nothing really changes. Nothing really. And also, we can think of it from perspective. I mean, we've all been there. Either we were non-practicing or not Muslim. Yeah. And when we go back and look at our, you know, our friends from our maybe primary school and stuff, you know, you look at their Instagram and their Facebook, it's nothing's really changed. You know, things are the exact same.
And the reason is, bro, this is because the other thing is that this is also the whole thing about willpower is actually also about breaking habits. It's about breaking bad habits and building new habits. You know, literally the perfect storm of destruction for your for you in terms of willpower is, you know, dopamine, fight or flight, plus your habit. If you have a bad habit, add to that dopamine, add to that a fight or flight response, right? You have almost got no chance, right? You have almost got no chance. You will be giving in again and again and again, right? So a lot of what we do, right, we love to think we're rational, but most of the time we're not. We're just habit. We're creatures of habits. Yeah. Like I know, like this is my, you know, I would say that my biggest single struggle is with food until now, even though, you know, the thing that prompted me to start this whole willpower journey was getting hold of control of my diet. I'll be honest, I've fallen not quite back to where I was, but I'm not far from where I was before I did it. Right. I've just relapsed. And by the way, that's the hardest thing with willpower is maintaining it, is maintenance. Right. And I talk about that in the willpower course. Right. Because the reason is because from the point of view of from neuroscience, from the point of view of our brain, they say that old habits, not that old habits die hard, old habits just don't die. They are permanently. So basically what happens is when you do something, it forms a neural pathway in your brain. It forms pathways. So your brain is all about connections, right? Habits are a series of connections in your brain that allows you, it's brilliant. They're brilliant because they allow you to automate your behavior. Yeah. If you had to think deeply about, imagine all of you who drive. So all of you who are drivers, yeah. Think about, it must have happened to you so many times that you've got in your car and you got to your destination and literally just don't remember anything. Right. Like you don't remember it. Imagine you had to drive like when you were a learner the whole time. Can you imagine how stressed out you would be? You would probably die of stress. You could not take the cortisol through your body. Like you can't take that much stress, right? You couldn't. Alhamdulillah for habit, right? Yeah. You know, you get muscle memory, you get the habit. It becomes ingrained in your brain, the process. It becomes, and that's what makes it so easy, right? It's just like it's an automatic behavior, right? It's one of the things that actually, one of the most important things for us as human beings is our ability to automate our behaviors. But obviously, you can see the downside. You can automate bad behaviors. You can automate habits that are just terrible. And they can start from a very, very young age. You don't even realize it. Food, right? So for me, I'm not, you know, I thought about this a lot, bro. Guys, listen, you know, if you go to my Facebook page, for literally since Ramadan, I've been giving talks every week, almost every week, about knowing yourself. Right. And I say it again and again, stop telling yourself stories. Stop telling yourself flipping stories. Right. But here's one of the stories I tell myself. Right. When I was at school, and this is true, when I was at school, I was always hungry. Right. I was always hungry. And I'm a growing kid. I was at boarding school. Right. We never had enough food. And I was hungry the whole time, like hungry, like I needed to eat because I was growing. I don't ever really remember hardly ever feeling like I was full. Right. And, you know, like literally that's it. If I see food, I feel I have to eat it. And by the way, I think a lot of people have this problem. It's very interesting. Sheikh, I could call him Sheikh or Imam, or I don't know, I probably just call him Ajmal Masroor, wrote a really interesting post just the other day. He was writing about that, right? About this, the urge that we have, like we just see food, we feel we have to eat it. We can't bear to be like even a little bit hungry for a minute. And that's it. It's just a habit. I see some nuts, I see some chocolate, I see something, pick it up, eat, eat. I'm not even hungry. I'm not even hungry. It's not prophetic because the Prophet said, eat when you're hungry. But it goes back to that habit that I did used to eat the whole time, and I was hungry the whole, really hungry the whole time. But I'm not anymore. but the habit is there. It's so deeply ingrained. It stays with you, brothers and sisters. So like Sabor said, don't think you're going to become a saint like one day. It's not going to happen. If you've got bad habits, it is really tough. So all you do, and those bad habits will never go. And the more you do it, the more ingrained they will be, right? So what they say is, you never get rid of bad habits. They stay in your brain forever, right? Not forever, but as long as your brain is there, right? But what you can do is override those bad habits with more stronger neural connections. However, what happens? Sometimes when you least expect it, you just slip into that old track, right? You fall into that old habit. You just like, and again, it's usually a series of triggers, right? You fall into that old habit, yeah? Okay, so it's quite a hard thing. This is why also you have to forgive yourself. You have to forgive yourself and know that Allah will forgive you because we're human. Alhamdulillah, Allah is Ghafur Rahim. We sin by night and sin by day, right? But this is that's a whole nother thing. So that's the perfect storm, bro. The perfect storm is your bad habits, your old neural pathways, being hijacked by dopamine, fight or flight response. You know, that's fighting the dragon. That's St. George against the dragon. That is the boy and the magician, fighting the beast on the path, right? That is the boy and the king, the boy and the king and the magician, right?
Yeah.
That's the hero's journey, fighting the demon, right?
And this advice that you're giving is very, very practical. Like, for example, when you spoke about giving yourself when you feel a trigger, you give yourself something to deflect, right?
Yeah.
Something which Isa has really helped me on. My diet's been poor, but I've been losing a lot of weight because of this OMAD thing, one meal a day. Every time I feel a trigger to eat something, I look back at how many hours I've already done. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So then I calm down. Like, it could be like, I love biryani. Yeah? It could be anything. But as soon as I see this, all of those hours are going to go to waste now.
Okay. Yeah. It's like me with Duolingo, right? It's like this language learning program. I have such a long streak that I can't bear to let it go. I would just do anything just to keep that streak going. But you know what? It keeps me going, right? And you know, whatever works, as long as it's not haram, right? Whatever works, you got to find the strategies. That's what willpower is.
Yeah.
And that's the great thing, by the way. Yeah. And this is something you pointed out, bro. I remember I was really impressed because I didn't really mention this in my course, although it is in Kelly McGonigal's book, right? I didn't mention it in the course, right? But you said one of the things he said, you said to me, I remember when you did the course, you said, you know, Abdurrahim, can't you dopamize the things you want to do, right? Mm. And I said, yes, that is an actual strategy, right? You can actually get yourself to build good habits by building in a dopamine kick. I actually think, by the way, this is what happens when you really connect with Allah. That's what happens, right? Yeah. You actually connect this feel good feeling with praying. When you turn to Allah and you stand in front of Allah, when you pray, when you make istighfar, right? When you really experience those deep, profound religious experiences, that's it. Like, your dopamine now is helping you. Like the Prophet said, it's very interesting, by the way. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said that everyone has a jinn, right? Everyone has like a kareem, yeah, that, you know, and this jinn invites them to evil, right? But except me, the Prophet said, my jinn just tells me to do good. I was really, because someone was asking me some question, right? And so I, because I didn't know the answer to this at all, so I asked someone to, a student of knowledge, I said, is this just for the Prophet or could this be for anyone, right? Could anyone, their jinn, encouraged him? He said, no, it is possible that anyone's jinn could also actually do that. It's not just the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, right?
Mashallah.
So like I said, if I said your nafs, right, was dopamine, just like you can train your nafs to desire Jannah, to desire to avoid the hellfire, to love knowledge, right? You look at the people who love knowledge, they're addicted to it, right? There are people who are addicted to dawah, right? Dawah addiction, right?
Dawah bug.
Yeah, addicted to, you know, struggle. You know, so there's all sorts of good things that you can be addicted to, right? Yeah. That are really positive and really good. And, you know, dopamine can help you, because that's originally, really, if you think about it, dopamine has a really good purpose. You have to remember its basic purpose is really good.
Yeah.
We just have, you know, we can use our willpower, use our, you know, developing those neural pathways to incentivize ourselves. To actually, the only thing you have to be careful is that, for example, right, what you don't want to do is, if you're on a diet, you don't want to make your incentive, right, you know, like, yeah, if I keep up this diet for a week, I'll have a big chocolate cake at the end of it, right? So you want to make sure that the way you incentivize your, you know, your dopamine is not buy more of the same stuff that you want to stop. That's not going to help you, right? That's just going to undo all the good, right? So yeah. That's why a lot of, you know, like some people say, you know, this cheat day and stuff like that is not actually a good idea.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And you know, it's also very interesting about this, you know, when it comes to willpower and when it comes to dealing with, you know, social media addiction or whatever, food addiction. I remember, and I think stories are always a good way of remembering things. I remember, you know, a brother who was pestering me to help him get a second wife. And then he was doing it like regularly, like, oh, this and that.
You got a whole store, right?
Well, yeah, store, I mean, it was sad. It was sad, but it was kind of like, okay, you know, people, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, one day what happened was he texted me and he said to me, if I commit zina, it's your fault. I got so angry. And I literally just said to him, the whole problem in your life is that you don't have a purpose. You don't have something to do. If you were focusing on dawah, I said to him, if you're focusing on dawah, if you're focusing on something big, you wouldn't have time. And I spoke to a student of knowledge because of this particular brother. And I said, this is what I feel his problem is. I feel his problem is he doesn't have goals in life. That's why he's only thinking about something. And, you know, you mentioned you can be addicted to something good. And this brings in a topic which I think is related. It sounds unrelated, but the whole idea of flow, that if you keep yourself in a position where you've got lots of work to do and you're not killing yourself, but you're not like comfortable, you just don't have time for anything else because you're just constantly in this state of flow. And it's like, you know, Sheikh, I think once you gave this example that when you're cycling and you get momentum, if you have to stop and restart, it's way more difficult. But if you're just on a particular trajectory, if you're accelerating, you don't want to stop. Because, you know, if you stop, that's it. You have to go back.
Yeah. It's why cyclists don't, like, people don't understand in towns and cities why cyclists jump red lights and stuff like that. It's because once you're going, you don't want to stop because it that's the hard bit. The hard bit is starting, you know, you have to keep starting because that getting that initial momentum is what is really hard, right?
Yeah.
But you like you, that's another favorite topic of mine is the whole discussion around flow, right? And optimal experiences and, you know, what is real happiness, which sort of goes back to where we started, right? Because dopamine doesn't care about real happiness.
Yeah.
Dopamine cares about what you imagine happiness is, right? This is very interesting as well. Because, you know, optimal experience most of the time is something that is initially hard to do, right? It's very interesting because just this morning I went out with my kids, right? So my little one was saying, no, I don't want to go, right? And I realized that I knew the minute, you know, he was out there, he was going to have an amazing time, right? But he doesn't, you know, it's just that initial thing to get dressed, you know, to step out into the cold, right? Whatever, right? And I know that I know 5 minutes later he's gonna be having the best time of his life, right? You know, but if he can say no, he won't, because that's it. You'd rather sit on a computer and have that thing that you think is sort of, and it is, you know, it can be fun playing a computer game. But most people, when they compare it, they will say, yeah, this thing where I push myself, this thing where I did something really difficult, this thing where I did something, like you said, bro, you have real goals. You're pushing yourself towards something that is, you know, that is the very edge of your capabilities and your limits, right? And even better, if you can contribute and improve in some way, you know, humanity in some way, that's it. That is the most satisfying thing that people do, are those things, right? Yeah. But they take that initial effort. They take that initial willpower, right? Mm. So again, yeah, again, if you can find yourself in that flow state, that's another, you know, I mean, that's a whole nother level, right? Really, that's, I guess that, again, if you go back to the hero's journey, that's what ultimately, you know, in the hero's journey, that's what they discover when they leave the comfort of their tribe. You know, they go through these trials and tribulations, they pass, they go into this cave, and they most of the time they go into some sort of other dimension, some other world. It's like another world, really, right? And it's in that other world that they find this state. What they find is this, it is really, they've pushed, they've gone out of their comfort zone, they've put themselves in a really difficult situation or situations, that's why they have all these trials and these tests, and you know, they have to fight these monsters and outsmart these things, and you know, whatever, and that's it. That's where they find their flow state, when they actually begin to really love that, you know. That's the danger. The danger is you can get lost there. The real hero comes back ultimately to share this knowledge with everybody else, right? That's the sort of, you know, that's the full circle of the hero's journey. A lot of, you know, from spiritual terms, a lot of people didn't come back. They go out into the wilderness and they stay in the wilderness, right? Because they're really happy there, right? You know, the true hero comes back because there's something precious they have to share with everybody, right?
Yeah.
And in a way, it's sort of the whole thing starts again, you know, and you reach it, I guess, a whole different level.
Yeah.
And you can see that, especially in the lives of the prophets, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, alhamdulillah, we covered willpower, yes, quite sufficiently. Definitely not anywhere close to what the information is in the course, getiwillpower.com. I'd highly recommend everybody does that. Inshallah, we're going to be trying to make this YouTube channel, Abdurrahim Green's YouTube channel, more active. At least one live stream, inshallah, I'm going to pester the Sheikh to get out every week. And what's most important is that if you found this information beneficial, tell your friends about it, tell your family about it. There's no better marketing than personal marketing, yeah? So we've got this new channel, is what we're going to do. So off the cuff, as they say, yeah. What do you think we should cover next week? Same time, 3 p.m. Flow?
I have no idea. Yeah, we can talk about flow. We can talk about that, definitely. Yeah, that would be really interesting. Yeah, optimal experience. A whole thing that I caught, like a whole course I did years ago, like it wasn't, maybe that's my next course I should do, actually. You got me going, bro, right? It was called Embracing the Inner Struggle on the Path to True Happiness. Yeah. I really enjoyed giving that course. Embracing the Inner Struggle. And that's what it's all about, basically.
Well, did you do this in 2016 by any chance?
Yeah, I think way before that. Yeah, I did it a couple of times. I did it. The first time I did it is in Canada way ages ago. It's like there is some sort of crusty, you know, old, hard to see video there was actually online. The whole thing was online. I don't know. It was a long course I did in the university, and someone had filmed it right from the back of the, you know, right from the back of the lecture theater. It's like, you know, I did it for Mercy Mission as well, right? I did it for them in one of their retreats.
Okay.
And yeah.
MashaAllah. I was saying 2016 because I remember you using that in one of the IRA meetings where you gave the analogy that, you know, we all want the perfect state. We all want the perfect ideal. And even when the Prophet ﷺ was the Amir and we were in the best of cities of Medina, you still had the Munafiqs, you still had you know, enemies, he's had people committing fornication. And it's a struggle in life, it's a struggle, you got to embrace it. You know, I still remember that. That was a very powerful message, mashallah. So, Jazakallah khair, Sheikh. Would you like to add anything before we end?
That's it.
Brilliant. Everybody watching, until next time, 3 p.m. GMT, next Saturday, inshallah, we will be live again. And make sure you subscribe to the channel. And we will be discussing the flow state. And please tell your friends and families about it. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.